Yes, blessed souls. Could you be loved? Yes, you can be loved, but you better start loving first. Blessings and greetings, greetings and blessings, blessed souls. We're live because we're going to stay alive in this most existential moment with the intent of being configured to Torah Chaim, instructions of life, Torah Chesed, instructions of kindness, Torah Rachem, instructions of mercies. You now tune into Blog Talk Radio, and we humbly assert we are the higher inner frequency. We call ourselves Soul Class. This is Soul Class 733 in conversation with Jerome Sage Butler, Part 7. Blesses our eternal creator, shalom, peace, and bracha, blessing upon the entire human family experience. 7.7 billion human beings gleaming and streaming, growing and flowing with this blessed creation. This is Anti-Eugenics Radio. With creator's help, our broadcast will take place on September 15th, starting at 10 a.m. Jamaican time. It's now 11:01, live from Turtle Island equals USA equals AKA Unified Soul Actualization. We plan on speaking with co-host, prolific lecturer Jerome Sage Butler, who dwells within his spiritual, cognitive, emotional realm, coined promoting Tree of Life values. Butler is driven to tap into his deep ancestral wellsprings of divine source, correlating, relating, and developing a dialogue with other human souls intended to guide human dialogue towards analyzing the moral and ethical nature we as human beings are well advised to explore. Program content, among other things, will focus on empowering a woman or to strengthen a man. As well, Butler will discover whatever he thinks is worth our while to consider and meditate upon. You can learn more about Jerome Sage Butler by befriending him on Facebook. That's Jerome Sage Butler. And typing in Tree of Life Television Network on YouTube.com and as well, Sela Media. The call-in number, which if you want to chime in to make the show a little bit more organic, is 347-838-8669. Meanwhile, may the eternal creator bless and protect you and your loved ones in a peaceful and pleasant manner. And joining us right now is Jerome Sage, live from the Diamond of Caribbean. And we're listening to, Diamond of Caribbean being Jamaica, of course, an instrumental version of Could You Be Loved by Rasta visionary singer, poet laureate, all-around righteous soul, Bob Marley. But this was recreated by a channel called Synth Xerox. So we thank them. And let's bring in Jerome Sage Butler. Good morning, Jerome.
Good morning, Brother Dan. Shalom, shalom. Blessings, you know. Yeah, man, from Blue Mountain, Jamaica, just looking out on the harbor, the whole waterfront from high up, you know. Beautiful sight. Blessings to all, you know, the listeners, both live and those who listen in the archived version.
Yes, sir. And I'd like to start before we go further, Jerome Sage. We have a tradition in Israel that the 29 days preceding the Hebrew lunar calendar year, which this year is 5780, which in the Hebrew there is an acronym Tafshin Pei, which relates to, when elucidated, the Heshna spell. It should be a year of wonders. So in order to further inject this type of consciousness, we shall now blow a ram's horn in three cadences. And the idea of this is to practice when we will be eliciting the person who is appointed in our various congregations around the world for the nation of Israel, the singularity of the human crying out to the Creator, Abba, Abba, Father, Father, save us, take us out of this exile mentality for us and all the children of Noah, all the inhabitants of the world. So without further ado, I'm going to exhibit a blowing of the shofar, and then we can go on with the contents of today's program. Hold on, please. And, Basil, hold on here. In about a couple seconds, we're about to blow. That we say, Jerome Sage, may all evil be blown away, may the enemies be scattered. Your take on these matters?
Absolutely. I mean, part of our traditions, you know, Christians take some of the traditions from ancient traditions, you know, Jewish tradition, and we blow the shofar as well. And yes, you know, a symbol of clearing away. Yeah, well, some churches do. The organization I'm a part of, and we do, you know. Clearing away evil, the essence of making the vibrations harmonize with the highest truth before we act in all things is absolutely essential in our culture and in just life itself, you know, clearing the path, declaring the spirit of the divine over all things before you take on the endeavors of life, you know. and before you even start a new cycle within the human year, it is always a good foundation stone upon which to build and the rest of the year, and also to continue, you know, the sacredness of the tradition. It's like a relay, you know, the baton was passed from the generation before you to you, so we maintain those traditions for posterity, but also for the sanctity of the family, you know, and the community. And then we pass it forward, you know, observing our traditions. But if it fails away within us, then, you know, it not just dies within us, it dies within all that comes after us. So it is very central, and I do appreciate it very much. You know, it's one of those things that, you know, I would say things that are antiquitous need more place in the present, you know?
Mm-hmm. I agree. Drum Sage and Blessed Souls, we're going to turn now. One of the ways of driving the evil out of this world and the enemies of true parity between man and woman is the learning of chapter 31 in Proverbs, where King Solomon wrote in tribute to his mother, Bathsheba, the virtues of a woman. And in chapter 31, verse 25, it reads as follows, and this was penned by King Solomon. Strength and beauty are her raiment, and she laughs at the last day. So our oral Torah tradition comments as follows. What is strength and beauty? Her garments are strong and durable and also beautiful. But this is referring to soul garments, but those, the garments of her thought patterns, the garments of her speech patterns, the garments of her action patterns. And as well, she may be, well, in fact, be adorned with physical strength and physical beauty. But one of our great teachers, the Ralbach, explains that her character traits are her true beauty. And she possesses the strength to overcome her physical desires, not to deny them, but to use them when they have to be used at the proper time. And in this particular cultural setting, she achieves these traits by following the ways of the Torah biblical teachings. On the last day, which is referring to the day of her death, she laughs. Why? Because she fears not death. Drum Sage, as you probably are aware of, the truly righteous do not fear death. In fact, Lubavitcher Rebbe was once asked, what happens after a person dies? And he said a more correct way to phrase the question is, what happens at the next level of life? And instead of overly sexualizing females, instead of worshiping them as if they're some sort of goddesses, they can be admired as queenly characters and as princesses and prophetesses and visionaries. But understand, their beauty is only as deep as how they're thinking, speaking, and acting. Now, there are women, of course, who physically, just as there are other men who are physically more beautiful to the human eye, but I know I've met many women, and many men for that matter, who might not be the most beautiful. They won't win a beauty contest, but they will win the beauty contest of the victory of the soul over the body, and they emanate out of grace, Jerome said. You know this. And you could talk about this, how the beauty of a woman, even for men, but a man to recognize the woman thinks right and speaks right and acts right, she is graced. And it's because of our insensitivity that instead of we look at them in another way, well, you know, she's shaped this way and shaped that way, which is basically, it's a type of idolatry. We don't want to idolatrize women, and we don't want to put them down. We want to see them strong, so they'll be more motivated to motivate us. Please take it away, Jerome, with this dialogue.
Beautiful brother Dan, the strength and beauty of a woman, you know, in essence, the not just the external, as you said, but the internal fabric of her makeup, you know, the thought patterns that are consistent, you know, with the values that support life in its truest essence, you know. You know, when you look at the internal makeup that would constitute this spiritual strength and beauty, further on and in other parts of Proverbs, you can see in reference to her state of mind being made manifest in terms of her actions, right? So for a woman to truly be that correct image of herself, a lot of virtue has to be involved. Virtuous thinking, that is a wholesome thinking that is balanced in outlook and in actuality, in manifestation. And that virtue must also fashion some form of compassion, right? And from that compassionate nature, with a virtuous rooting, life has laws, order, edicts, a flow in divine nature, right? When she acts from this, there are fears of her own, there are fears of her physical, emotional life, and spiritual life will be addressed. The function she fulfills within the family, within the community, within the spirit, will become more evident and you know more relevant. You know, she will see her place, know her place, be able to influence the environment around her. And then with the virtue and the compassion, then she would enter into the spiritual realm of grace. And where grace abounds, you know, a freedom of, you know, expression, a sense of empathy, right, really reigns abound within such a consciousness, where there is a caring for each, you know, being our brother and our sister's keeper. Such a woman being a mother, we can see the virtues, the compassionate nature, the way in which she would educate, provide, and basically protect her children, right, and sculpt, shape their moral values, ethical and otherwise, and in the outlook in the community as well too. All these work together to fashion the consciousness of what truth is. So if the woman is balanced, her children are growing balanced, the mate she attracts will hence have to have the same balance. He would have brought the same frequency as she do. So by her very nature of that strength and that beauty, work so awesomely to her virtues, her compassion, and the grace of the divine in her activities, she attracts a man who is inspired and impressed by that, because it is a standard set. The standard set, now the man has the mark to which to reach to. No, she will not accept low morals, you know, weak virtues. She will accept only strength and the willingness to improve. This inspires the character traits in the man to be more responsible, right? To quantify the experience of his existence and plan for the family, meaning plan for more than one, for more than himself. The virtues, the very nature of the strength, the beauty within a woman, empowering her to be the true self, affording her, right, the internal as well as the physical functions of being a true woman, also creates in the environment the premise of being a true man, right? When the woman's personality and her morals and her ethics falls, right, the standard in the environment also falls, because this is by which now the men are judged, because that is what they will go towards, right? And the children also will be grown and groomed within this reality. So from the perspective of a mother, she will influence in such a way. From the perspective of a wife or a girlfriend, she will influence in that way. So girlfriends, let's say, that are unbalanced, right? They create great turmoil within the relationship. It is just the fact that two become one. So when she's copulating with a male and off-balance in her attributes and in her virtues, then obviously it's going to off-balance the relationship and make it more complex. Things that are procedural in life becomes these deep psychological roadblocks, right? And people would say, well, you know, you're probably unsuited to be together. But, I mean, then we're into the understanding of psychology. Are one truly unsuited, or is the mind not trained in the appropriations, right? Of suitability. It's a thing. Once we have the right state of mind, doesn't matter who, what the situations are, we are then able to function on that high level. So the essence is that an empowered, strongly clarified woman with a divine sense of strength, as well as a physical sense of strength and beauty, inspiring the environment, holding the man to that standard of her presence, inspires. It is the actual way. It might seem intense in wordology, but it's just a moral principle by which communities and societies grow. Or, you know, it is becoming even more essential. Why? Because we've seen what the lack of such an ethical, moral, and truly divine way of self-expression in women, as well as in men, has affected the entire environment. Because the immorality in men also, right? The lack of true virtue and morals and ethics causes man to act bitter, aggressive, and disassociated, unconnected. And such cold, as we call it, right? We use the word cold, such cold-hearted actions, right? Tend to lead to a numbing of the relations between man and woman, because that is the inspiration that man is giving off unto woman. So her deeper levels of compassion is basically nullified in his presence. So if we have more of these men in the plane, and more of those women in the plane with the dysfunctionality of energy flow, then we can see how it is that the societies are splintered and the moral values are lax when people say religion isn't relevant, right? We are going towards a self-pleasing ideology. But the essence of it is that it starts from in the simple context of the masculine and the feminine. You know, recently, Brother Dan, I was looking at it from the wavelength of entertainment. And I'm in Jamaica right now. There's a big uproar about dancehall music. Now, Brother Dan, I know you know the difference between the reggae culture and the dancehall culture. So the reggae culture, you know, would be more like the more spiritual and more dancehall, more secular, right? Pop culture.
Right.
But still, in Jamaica, our dancehall still had a moral tactitude that was closely pegged to the ethical, moral music in what we call culture music or reggae music. So even though dancehall was said to be secular, the proponents of it still had the same moral values. What is happening now, however, I must say? People are saying, and I can concur in some regards, that it's an influence of external cultural ideas in pop culture that is changing it. But what is the change? The change is even in what I would call the situationalness of the dancehall and the spatiality of it, the way in which people move within the dancehall, right? The physicality of the body. Because remember, we dance, you know, and we sing and we chant. But the dancing now, the singing and the chanting, the body language of it is unnatural to us. We do not know this body language. It is a foreign body language to us. We see it in our external culture, but it's affecting our culture now. And what is it causing?
Unfortunately, for some reason, Jerome Say just got dropped. Hopefully, we'll call back into the program. While Jerome Sage is hopefully going to be calling back into the program, as he was commenting on external influences infiltrating into the dance hall, whether it be the music or the dancing style, I just want to reflect back that when I first encountered reggae music in 1982, it was strictly cultural. It was through the music of Bob Marley, eventually Black Uhuru. Then I learned about Bunny Wailer and, of course, Peter Tosh. Let's bring back Jerome Sage.
Yes, brother.
I just want to interject. When I first got involved with reggae music in 82, although I had heard the music before, I mean, not knowing that Bob Marley coined, like, you know, what was the song about I Can See Clearly Now, I remember going to dance hall where actually it was quite cultural. The music wasn't as slack. This is the early 1980s. And I do remember there was a song about someone, a dance hall song, which was popular. I'm not going to name the artist. But it was basically a person talking about getting into an adulterous relationship. And then another big song that came out a couple years later, actually in the early 90s, which I heard, was about someone cheating on his girlfriend. And I think that, you know what I mean, those are cultural values which we can ultimately say are probably directly or indirectly coming from the Hollywood productions of cultural indifference. Back to you, Jerome Sage. I want to make that brief comment.
Oh, nice. That's a nice reference and an interplay between the culture that has influenced our culture a lot. So the physicality and the emotional movement within the body of the dancehall is changing, right? And how does it affect the male and female relationship? Well, number one, there's a heavily sexualization of the music, the dance, and the movement. Like you said, Morale, the music used to be ethical, as I was saying, and to support one's family, one's community, one's relations.
Yes.
Then it began to be about immoral and unethical acts. Now, the more that grew in the dancehall, right, and the physicality of the expression and the body language changed in the dancehall, what began to happen was that the kind of egoic mind in the male, because the males are the more proponents of the dancehall, the egoic minds of the male took over, so they're no longer led by the ethical, moral mind. The egoic mind took over, and it was always about egoic satisfaction. So they started denigrating the very aura of the woman, right? And they dragged the presence of the essence of femininity, of womanliness, of motherliness down. They practically fashioned it into a sexual epitaph, and it basically polarize the women and the men in the dance hall, because previously they used to dance together, if you understand what I'm trying to say. They used to have that intimate connection. It was a singularity that had two components, right? But then now they separated, because the egoic mind of the men who lead the dance hall split it and talk about their sexual fantasies, understand me, out of board, overboard, immoral, to the highest level. And then the women who are in the same business trying to economically survive now is forced to be immoral as well too. So previously in the dance, I usually have two segments. One where they do like the cultural music, right? And that cultural music was a way of saying to people, here is the moral foundation, would I say, these are the roots, you know, the foundation. And then we go to the popular, which is the no ideas thing, right? The evolution. Now the issue is, when the cultural music usually play, it was actually cultural music, but the singularity of this culture now has forced the cultural music to be what? Just as immoral in lots of context and lewd. That's the one they play in the dance hall. Not that there isn't cultural music that has the moral and ethical content still, but the ones that are playing in the dance hall matches this kind of a separation, a family culture. So now the women dance on one side. I'm getting to the point. The women dance on one side. The men dance on one side. When the women and the men dance together now, the women have their legs wide open. And pardon me if anyone is offended by this language, I'm going to use this word. It's almost like a woman who sells sex. I'm not going to use a prostitute, I'm going to use a hookah. It's like a hookah. Wide open legs, right? And then the man is across, let's say he's 3 meters away. And then he runs, right? Might even do a backflip, a spin in the air, and land straight on top of her. With emphasis on the pelvic area. So that is now the example of the union of man and woman. It's not even cordial copulation. It is actually just violent, egoic, almost, people say, freaky. You know what I mean? Off the natural order. So that body language, that ethics and lack of morals, right, has now become the dancehall, its culture. So the men and the women who are now grown up in that have a big indifference to each other. They don't even dance together in any kind of a unifying way. So naturally the culture of it now is that the women stand on one side and the men stand on one side. And when it's time to dance, the men dance in their own little egoic body language and the women the same. It destroys the unity of family. It destroys the way in which we have been taught how to maintain this reality. We're not saying that we're having these scores like we're saying, A+, you're the best family. No, we're saying that what is happening is that everything is so out of sync, and even the best amongst us are still suffering the indifference of so much people who are into this way of thinking that it's taking over. The music is so derogatory, and I must say, it's played everywhere, right? Because it's taking over everything, and it's not clean. It's not even just that there's some curse words, you know. If it was about curse words, we know culture of curse words, and we can deal with it because, you know, it's derogatory, but it's culture. But listen to me, but it's not curses. I'm talking about you.
Well, you're breaking up a little bit, Jerome Sage. I didn't hear the last sentence.
Hello?
Yeah, I hear you, but it is like you're the transmission into my ear through my telephone is very unclear. So I don't know, maybe you can go back to your original position where you were standing or sitting to get a clear, so I can hear you more clearly, which means the listeners can hear you more clearly.
Okay, so can you hear me more clearly now?
Yeah, clearly, crystal clear.
Yes, so because of this change in the body language and the ethics of the dancehall, the young people who are growing up now are highly divisive and separated male to female. Right. They do not know how to communicate appropriately, because the only form of actual communication they're seeing in terms of the body language, right, which is 60% of communication, it isn't really nice, right?
Right.
So the deportment has changed, the attitude has changed, so now there's a split. So we find that even in younger relationships now, young marriages, young relationships, there's a great problem with cheating, as you get alluded to with the song that, you know, inferred that men should cheat. It has become now a culture. So there's a culture that's supporting that separation.
Mm. I'd like to just interject that as well. Another problem I could see developing from this type of exhibitionism on the dance floor is those who are, so to speak, too shy to do it. But then they develop a frustration because they don't have the internal drive, which I think is a blessing, to go up on the stage and exhibit themselves, whether it be the female component or the male component. So they might take that frustration after the dance hall, and it could be subconsciously residing them. So when they do get into a relationship, which eventually becomes intimate, they might become subconsciously turning towards a more violent form of sexuality. I mean, sexuality is not a, as you well know, and anyone listening, sexuality is not a mechanical action. It is the bonding of two souls with hopefully the intent of producing a third soul, a child, a blessed boy or girl, or at the very least, if the woman does not become pregnant, it is a sharing of soul powers. I mean, what people term as, you know, it's very interesting, Jerome, that in this day and age, there are two things that afflict. I know in North America, I can't speak for the world. You have erectile dysfunction and a lot of problems with the prostate gland. And I once spoke to a doctor about this is because I don't know. Now you told me that because there's such an over-sexualization, and men are so overly stimulated that eventually it leads to them momish actually wasting their potentialities, which you understand what I'm saying, and the listeners do. I'm not going to give you that explicit. Same time, too, it causes the inflammation of the prostate gland, which creates even further problems with fertility. So the over-sexuality my children didn't come through spontaneous, you know, generation. We were one flesh, and we had, with the blessings of the Most High, three children. And for those who have the blessings, three or more, five more, whatever it may be. But it was a relationship, the greatest aphrodisiac, more than any ED pill, is the relationship itself. That is what generates the sensuality. Now, it's just the physical manifestation, the physical attraction, it's very important. But it's the outer, it's the exterior of the relationship. If there's not that inner drive with values, which is the glue from above, to bring the two people together, it becomes a mechanical act, and that's where the frustration and the sexual impropriety takes place, and the prostituting oneself, whether it be men or women, because there are men who prostitute themselves as well. And eventually, there's no, we have a saying, a person can desire something, but in that physical body, they can only desire so much. So a person desires more than what they are, which is the source of their frustration, and ultimately their disconnection from Creator at that particular moment in time. Your comments on that?
Absolutely, brother. And I think well said, well put together. Absolutely. A lot of the frustration that are gleaned from these experiences by people who aren't morally inclined to act that way does show up in relationships. People feel that they're inadequate in higher levels than we can imagine. Because of the image presented to them, they don't feel that they can be that way. I had issues of that thought process as well, too, to how they presented to me during the cultural times of my youth, right? It was there, but not as intense. Now it's more intense. Now it's vying for their attention in every way possible, right? So the essence of true intimacy are the sweetness in the relationship, the high in the sexual experience. Yeah, it is because of a relationship. It's because the souls are bonded together, not tied together because of some kind of contrast or pain, but bonded together because of the soul's expression and its need. You understand me? And when you find trust and equanimity in someone and you bond with that person through the sex, through the experiences, life has greater meaning. Now, when you just go straight to sex, that absolutely. So it's like when you just go to sex that has attachments to the soul but hasn't really gone to the deeper depths. It's like, as you say, for the men having those erectile dysfunction or the prostate issues, it really has a lot to do with overstimulation, that you are actually operating something contrary to its design. You know, you are operating it out of its design, and in essence, that causes the imbalance, and it will eventually reverberate within the being because it is the being that is being used out of context. So people say, how do we put it together? We'll put it together this way. The mental patterns that lead to the behaviors that are out of sync eventually wrecks the body, because the patterns that the mind sustains itself to eventually become physicalized activity. The way we think is the way we are. So when things are demoralizing, far without ethics or anything that is good and wholesome, right, the spirit of separation, divisiveness grows in it. It's not wholesome. So no matter what activity comes from it, no matter what part of our consciousness is grown from it, the manifestations won't be good. So we have to check the way we think about things, how we approach the right speech, as you were saying earlier, and the right way in which to speak as a man and as a woman. And right way to speak doesn't just mean lingua or the language of palpability. Right. What it really means is the language of honesty, which is a heart-to-heart, right? Speak truth and speak from the true experience, though it might not always be pleasant to relate this truth. If you relax a moment, and I'm speaking to those who might be going through situations too, if you relax a moment and examine the discomfort, there is a way to relate it that it's not discomforting to you who is relating it, and to those we are relating it to. It is fear a lot of times that causes us to relate it in a discomforting manner, you know. So there are ways in which we can put our psyches into the right alignment and choose wisely based upon our thought patterns and the activities through speech, through physicality, through the events we hold with each other, will start to show the morality, what we call morality, the presence of God within our human experiences, right? So that and the space flow.
Well, you're breaking
in
up again.
Actual way.
You broke up for one. Could you repeat that last sentence? You broke up on me for that for a couple seconds. Repeat the last sentence, please.
Yeah, I was saying about the spatiality. You know that in the space, in the human space, that is where we are most seeing the effects of that separation, right? The disharmony comes in that space. When people go into like the Mars, when people go into this human space, it is so inhumane. It is so mechanical. It has lost the softness, the subtlety. It's all about people trying to self-preserve in an environment that they don't realize because of the separation. They're actually making the environment more toxic by how they're acting.
Yes.
And that is not just because of the physical environment. It's not just because of the malls or the shopping centers or the restaurants. It is because the human hearts, their minds, the way they're thinking is out of sync with what is the actuality of life. So it strains the truth. So when you go into an environment with people so confused and worrying about things that are on the surface of life, but they fill the environment with it, it's hard for others to enter into the source of life, into the inner being, you know, to chew on the moral tactitudes that we need, the ethical stuff, you know, as a good woman and a good man, you understand, being considerate, being compassionate, you understand, sharing even in the small morsel.
Beautiful, Drum Sage. I we could talk about this for the next 10 shows, but I do want to segue because to another subject, which is very much connected to the rectification of these wrongful matters that you just so brilliantly elucidated upon. Again, this, Blessed Souls, is the month of Elul in the Hebrew lunar calendar year. And from our tradition of Israel, this was a favorable time because from the beginning of this month until Yom Kippur, which is basically a 40-day period, that's when Moses went up to Mount Sinai a second time, actually a third time, excuse me, and he received the second pair of the tablets in which were engraved the Ten Commandments, of course. Now, Moses had supplicated before he went up the third time up to Mount Sinai, and he asked the Creator to show him his glory, or the essence of Creator as Creator unto himself, and he said, no man can see me and live. We can only see the Creator at that level when we go to the next level of life. However, what the Almighty said is, I will reveal my glory to you through the following divine attributes, which I'm sure has found its way into Christianity as well and other forms of spirituality. And this you will find, blessed souls, if you go to chapter 34, verses 6 and 7 in the book of Exodus. We call it Exodus, Shmos. And it goes like this. I'm going to read out the 13 divine attributes, Jerome Sage, and of course I'm looking forward to your feedback on this. So it goes like this. Divine attribute number one is Creator, Creator, the God who is the source of all kindness. Attribute number two, who is merciful. Attribute number three, and gracious. Attribute number four, who takes a long time. Attribute number five, to get angry. Attribute number six, and does a great amount of kindness. Attribute seven, and truth, Creator, source of all truth. Attribute number eight, he keeps his kindness. Attribute number nine, for thousands of generations. Attribute number 10, he forgives iniquity. Attribute number 11, and transgression. 12, and he forgives sin. And attribute number 13, and he cleanses. And from there, the first Chabad Rebbe said that these attributes of mercy are the source of our ability to tshuva, of returning. Jerome Sage, if people would focus on this, and then I just want to mention Lubavitcher Rebbe of this generation mentioned, with the knowledge of these 13 attributes of mercy, it is now at a favorable time for each one of us to get engaged in the following surface. If you really believe these 13 attributes of mercy are coming from the Creator, transmitted to the mighty Levi prophet Moses, they'll go out and greet everyone with a shiny countenance, because the Creator is now, he's known as the Melech Basara, the king in the field, going out to greet the people, the nations. So if we greet everyone with a cheery and shiny countenance, We are accessing our divine image, reflecting out those 13 attributes of mercy upon mankind and humankind and womankind and all the other varieties of creation. Drum Sage, your take on these matters.
Blessings. Such great traditions that have continued, you know, even into Christianity. Like Christ said, when you do your good works, you know, the people will see your good works and glorify your Father which art in heaven. So the essence of that shining countenance that is esteemed through mercy and through the divine attributes of mercy is at the highest point of activity in this world. Because when darkness gets to its strongest point, then light is at its most intense. Mercy is at its highest level now because offense is so great amongst humans, our human experience right now. The attributes of mercy is called into activity within our personal relationship or family homes, within our school, within our education system, within our work environment, within the pursuits of the functionality of life. You know, we're experiencing that negativity, that separation on the trains and the buses and, you know, on the freeways, mm-hmm. you know, along the pathways of life. So essentially, the attributes of mercy now, to be forgiven, to be respectful, to be compassionate, to be honorable in all ways, at least in the simplest to the most intense, is very much necessary. Conflicts are everywhere. Separation and divisiveness runs wild. You know, that mm-hmm. true countenance that is welcoming to others, I can say that in some regard, I see that it's growing upon me as well, too, because as I get further into my spirituality, I realize one thing. People now begin to look at me who have not had a physical encounter of me or have seen me somewhere, but they begin to look at me and they're drawn, right? And for a second, even if the ego was about to go in and say, Jerome, whoa, it's a girl, oh, she likes you, right? Or if it's a man, he respects you. Before the ego begins to take over, the spirit comes in and says to me, remember, the works, the good works you do, it's not about your glory, it's about the divine glory. Then each of us can be so selfless. Hallelujah. If each of us can be so selfless as to really allow the divine to take hold of not just the activities, but even our identity, we'll find that the attributes of mercy would have been working at its highest level, because forgiveness and a whole lot of trust, you know, and that willingness, you know, that tolerance, all these things helps us really, you know, love and appreciate each other, or be able to resonate mm-hmm. that love, you know, experiences, so that others can be corrected, even in their own space and time, without a word being spoken, by just them seeing that there is something in the spirit of this person, or in the spirit of the experience of these persons, that transforms their thinking.
True. I had an uncle. He passed away about 15 years ago. In fact, I was talking about him with someone this morning, that he was the owner, eventually, of 11 retail clothing stores in New England, Connecticut, Massachusetts, Rhode Island, and the eastern seaboard of the United States of America. And everyone knew he was the boss because, you know, workers, we got, you know, the boss is on the floor selling the clothes. You know, everyone's in, you know, standing at attention, so to speak, you know, emotionally, intellectually. And he would come up to a customer,
yes.
and he would greet the customer as if he was one of the workers. And when it came to fitting the pants, he had a seamstress or a tailor in his shop or his shops that he would himself would get down on his knees and he would mark off the cuff. And then after the person took the pants, he would take them and he would bring it to the seamstress and tailor and saying, please take care of our customer. And he, when he passed on, so many people came to his funeral, Drum Sage, people remarking how he was just so nice. And he used to tell me, you know, when you give charity, no one has to know. And even before he passed away, a couple of years before he passed on, I met a rabbinical emissary of the Lubavitcher Rebbe who was out in West Hartford, Connecticut, saying, oh, your uncle, Lenny Seaman? He used to give me a lot of money, and I never knew about it. And I was part of I'm part of that Hasidic branch that he was giving to, that was to this emissary out in West Hartford, Connecticut. I said, wow. And now, we say, Drum Sage, that there are 24 attributes to kingship. There are 24 attributes to the kahuna, the priestly branch of Israel. But to acquire a good name, it exceeds all the attributes of kingship and all the attributes of priestlyhood. Because a person who's doing good and thinking good and acting good, in a sense, they're even higher than the king and higher than the priest. And we need more people to take the courageous stand to realize not everyone's going to be the high priest, not everyone's going to be the king, but anyone can
True.
Possess the crown of a good name. And one of the ways is being pleasant with people.
True. And I think the essence of, even as we talk about kingship and leadership or rulership, because, you know, rulership is the lower end of kingship or leadership, the essence of it is to be a great follower. If you cannot be a great follower, then you won't be a great leader, because it's by following you know how to lead. That's how you survey the terrain in experience, right? And in aspects of knowing. And so therefore, then you are able to lead. The humility, which is derived from servanty, from being a servant, from, you know, servitude, offering service, right, is one of the greatest foundation stones for the, I would say, the administration, you know, of leadership and power. That if you do not have that, to me, Jerome said, but if you do not have that, I think you're not a leader. I think you might be a ruler, but I wouldn't say you're a leader. You know, because that ability to follow, just as you said, your uncle, being an excellent example, among others, is amongst the flock, amongst the fold. And the Spirit is just saying to me, you know, but that is the essence of what Christ has always been. Yeshua was not identified easily amongst the brethren. If it was so, then when they came from it, it would have been easy to season, right? Because our identities become the collective. That's how it is. You know, in washing
right.
the feet of your brethren was a submission to recognize that you put away that egoic mind to the calmness of the spiritual, to humility, to love. So in that, you give with no expectation of receiving.
True. And I think also a person who is able to greet others with a shiny countenance, and they are accessing the shiny countenance of the Creator who gives all of us life. And Lubavitch Rebbe mentioned about this, that when a person can work on this, and when he said be engaged in it, like it's your business to be pleasant to people, that you are then you are accessing this ability that the countenance, the shiny countenance of Creator is upon you. I mean, I'm sure you've met, I've met many people like this from around the world, Jerome Sage. When people have a proper, shiny, positive countenance, you know it's not just them, that they're accessing something from above themselves and merely reflecting it or refracting it back out on other human beings. Your take on this matter?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, as I said before, you know, Christ, when you...
I'm losing again. I lost you. Say it again. I lost you. Sometimes you just faded out again.
Yeah, I was saying... first portion. Now Christ says, when you do the good works, it is not to your glory, but to the Father which art in heaven, to acknowledge that there's a greater source of that goodness that is expressed through you. That this beacon, this shininess of countenance, this welcoming, this very warmth of presence is a sign of the divine. You know, as you say, tapping in to that divine, having it manifest as behaviors, right? As a way of how you are actually. Right, the way in which you walk down the street, the way in which you greet the persons you pass by, or the way you are in a conflict, the way in which you are in the passing of a conflict, you know, in the approach of a conflict, the way you are in terms of, you know, separation to bring back to unity, right? Because some people work very strongly in community building, and they're not the ones always on the television or always in the
right.
media, right?
1,000%.
And they work very assiduously at that. That when they go, and people say to you, did you know that he was a patron of this, that, and that? For their own sake, they're telling you this. But for his sake, that's how you didn't know. I believe these are divine attributes, absolutely. I have no contentions with that. And I think these attributes spawn greater interconnections in humans when we really just become them. Really, just do good, and good will follow. Not for the expectation of good, but that the fact is that's how we have peace in this earth. Right? Peace amongst the differentials of human thinking and human behavior. So I say, brother, every experience even we do on this program adds to a little bit of that light, you know, resonating a little bit more in our environment. Certainly the environment of in the Americas, Africa, Asia, the Americas, I mean the Caribbean, right?
Amen.
It's the essence of people, Europe as well, right? It's the essence of people sharing that beacon. The light is not a visual light. has to be resonant with it. It's not a visual light. This is the light of the soul. And it's an experience and so many wavelengths. So this is the optic nerves you see in your heart. So it's not a light.
You broke up a little bit, so if you can go back to the last two sentences. I'm sorry?
Yes. No, I was saying sometimes it's in music. It's in the essence of how you are, right? It's not visual. It's not that you need to see where you are. It's not like you need to be right here visually to see.
Right. Again, the clarity is a little lacking. I'm not your thoughts, I'm saying, in me just hearing your physical voice, it's hard to hear what you just said.
Oh no, I know. I'm sorry.
Oh,
I'm
now you're crystal clear.
Oh yeah.
You can just
hold
that position
saying,
and just repeat the last couple sentences.
Yeah, I'm saying it's the essence of like this light. It's not a physical light that you see it. Like you could say, I see it across there. You experience it right across the spectrum, like even through the visual art of someone who's imbued in the light, right? Even in terms of the physical movement of someone imbued in the light, or even though the vocal resonance of someone who's imbued in the light. So it transcends that you could be in the farthest regions of the earth, but that light will always reach you. You know, there's obviously that interaction in some context, that the light of the soul, the light of Yah, will come upon us. We'll have experience of it, you know?
Right. When we talk about light from the inner dimensions of Torah, we're talking about not just physical light. That's just allegorically trying to illustrate the point to reach the ears of human beings. We're talking about revelation. And I want to go back to the 7th, 8th, 9th, and 10th attribute of mercy, Jerome Sage, is that, again, the 7th divine attribute of the 13 attributes of mercy revealed to Moses at Mount Sinai the second time he went up to the mountain. And truth. Attribute number 8, he keeps his kindness, 9 for thousands of generations, 10 he forgives iniquity. We have to pay homage, Jerome Sage and blessed, to our ancestors, because something they did thousands and thousands of years ago is allowing us to access what our ancestors generated, because the fact that there is a Jerome Sage Butler or a Don Zuccia Goodman in our families, that's our ancestors had to be doing good things, Jerome Sage, because thousands of years later, here we are, the descendants of those who lived in the time of this transmission of the 13 attributes of mercy, even before that, because these attributes actually existed before. They were just revealed and therefore made as an instruction. Torah means hara, instruction. So therefore, we have to be aware of the fact and humbled by the fact that our ancestors stood for some sort of connection for truth. Therefore, we engaged in kindness. And for thousands and generations, despite the fact there could have been lackings in our, you know, in our genealogical tree, our ancestry, the Creator has forgiven us, and here we are living today. What do you think, Jerome Sage?
Amen, amen, amen. Blessings and blessings. Yes, the ancestral lineage must have been doing something right for us to come forward and have that moral guidepost that has been, you know, through generation to generation. It meant that there has been great sacrifices, obedience, and honor amongst our grandparents, you know, great teachers, simple women and men of the spirit, right? A decent moral tradition that could keep a certain kind of a gene alive that can be passed from generation to generation. So the moral essence which saturated within the genetic code is expressed, you know. And as we relate to this, to the light within us, which is that consciousness, that awareness of the divine, and the willingness to put it into function or practice, we have to give thanks, yes, for definitely our mothers and fathers, grandmothers and great-grandmothers, and to the great ancestral community. In Jamaica, we have great reference to a lot of, you know, family enslaved Africans who did a lot, you know, at the end of the chattel slavery, and also those who fought during the enslavement of Africans to bring about a certain clarity in our consciousness and our awareness. We've made them national heroes, and in some sense, you know, some of them are lost in that rhetoric, but in another sense, we do understand that it did play an integral part in keeping the moral spectrum, ethically and otherwise, alive in us. That as we thought about our reality, it was a part of our genetic makeup. So it wasn't something we had to strive for. It was already there. So as we pray to the divine to keep these attributes of mercy and kindness within us, to the greater essence of forgiveness, right? purposes was really towards equanimity, to bring us back to love, where there are no real separation, but just you know, different wavelengths and frequency.
Mm-hmm.
And the true core of us is to just be at peace with each other, and that's where God is, you know.
So in the multiplicity of vibrations, sensations, and revelations, great is the glory of the King in the abundance of the multitudes here on Terra Firma. One last topic I'd like to touch on briefly with you, Jerome Sage, is that one of the things Lubavitch Rebbe instructed us on was that we should intend our thoughts, meaning be focused. There is an outward mindfulness, but there's an inwardly directed mindfulness, that when we are directing ourselves to having those good thoughts, which will lead to good speech and take action, it will actually energize ourselves. Meaning, you know, there's Lively Up Yourself with Bob Marley, which was a wonderful song and still remains a wonderful song, getting up and dance and moving around. But you can also, the Rebbe is promoted the idea, and through my sharings, we're still actively promoting it, we can energize ourselves by our intent of purpose. That is what
yes.
will give us soul energy, because it's our thoughts which are coming, streaming down from our divine image, will help us lively up ourselves with our proper intent towards being faithful stewards on the earth. Your take on these messages, Jerome Sage?
Absolutely. Like I said, Bob Marley, to lively up yourself. Yeah, shake off those feeble mindsets and those weak, you know, purviews and viewpoints, you know. Yeah, get out of the low moral-minded thinking, yeah, the depressive thoughts, right, or the thoughts that don't cause engagement. Get into the thoughts that cause engagement, that spawn good conversation, good reasoning, great communication. Let's get into those thoughts. Lively up yourself. Get up and dance, you understand me? Dance to the glory, righteous, you know, soul-filling music, whatever touches the heart. And let that frequency reverberate in the environment and see how bright and cheerful your day is. Yeah? Some serotonin and endorphin. Set free.
Amen. Yeah, the Nachman of Brezel, Jerome Sage, once said, when a person is playing depressed, you should get up and dance. And precise type of dancing where you're stamping your feet in the ground, as if to stamp on the head of the Satan to say, get away, I don't need to feel depressed because you're bothering me. This is an approach that
Absolutely.
Is used by Brezlev Chassidim. Get up and dance. Stamp the floor. Stamp down that evil one. Jerome Sage, how can, as we come to the end of today's, which I think was very, powerful and energetic and heartsick, as we say in Yiddish, a very heartful presentation, how can more human souls who are blessed with the divine image connect with you through cyberspace and otherwise?
Blessings, brother. It was a wonderful program, Brother Dan. And as always, I give thanks, you know, for you having this platform and for you continuing your work, you know, within the community and within, you know, the mental health fraternity, and just bringing
Amen.
Good, clarified light, you know, to those who need it. People can contact me, Jerome Sage Butler, that's JeromeSageButler, and that's on Facebook and on Instagram. On YouTube, it's Tria Life Television Network, and Tria Life is spelled TREEA, capital A, capital LIFE. It's not Tree of Life, it's Tree Alive. It's Jamaican, it's Patois. Tria Life Television Network, or Sela Media, which is SEA. LA Media on YouTube, and that's where we have our reasoning. And they can contact me at 1-876 340-5326, and that's a WhatsApp. Yes, you can WhatsApp me a message, and I do like coming to projects. I'm a performing artist as well, so I do these therapy sessions and seminars. So there's always interactions, and there's always something we can reason about. So, you know, give me a link.
Amen. Thank you, Jerome Sage. And bless those, we're going to end off with today's program reminding everyone that before we say, you've got to be good, I say, Danzus, your goodman's got to be good. And Jerome Sage, I'm speaking on his behalf, he knows he has to be good, but we all got to be good, because it's Tevo Tov Lehetev, it is the nature of the good to do good. And we are basically microcosmic projections out into this blessed creation, which if we're in a blessed creation, it means we're blessed. The Creator waits so ever patiently for us to activate that innate goodness which exists in every one of us. And I want to end today's program with a very venerable song, which was composed by the first Chabad Rebbe, Rav Shneur Zalman of Liadi. And the song was composed in a way that if you listen to the music, it actually is corresponding to the four divine letters of the ineffable four-letter name of the Almighty Creator. May all of this manifest that we see the revelation of the Most High in a way of unity among the human family experience with Ahava Chad, one love, Gor Lachad, one destiny, Kolam for Olos, but Dark in Om, Dark Yishalom, in a pleasant, peaceful way. This is Danzius Goodman, your international, local, cyberspace Torah Askan, Torah activist, wishing everyone a wonderful week, and let's go from strength to strength. Take care, everyone.